It's time for the Home Improvement Show. I'm Joanne Brackens. Walter Assey, president of Renovco, is sitting right in front of me, getting ready to take all of your questions, and they're already coming in. 514-790-0800. You can call us or text us. Walter has been the busiest bee because we've been flooded here in Montreal. We've had a burst of pipe. We've had flood. Have you had a second for yourself?
I'm building an ark right now. That's what I do in my free time.
It's not Noah's ark. It's Walter's ark. Just leave a little room for me. That's all. You're good?
I am fantastic.
You had a good week?
I had a very good, productive... I'm tired, but you know what? It's a labor of love.
It is. And actually, Walter is one of those people, you know, I don't think slept for the 72-hour period at some point, but because so many of you were calling him for help, and he was out there and trying to clean up the big messes that had occurred after Debbie, of course. Listen, the calls are coming in. We're going to start taking those now. Who's been waiting longest, Ari? Okay, we have Jerry on the line. Jerry has water in the cold room. Jerry, can you hear me?
I can. Thank you very much for taking the call.
All right, take it away.
All right, so we had some infiltration between where the cold room ends and the main staircase meets the foundation in the front of the house. Everything was taken out except for a 2-inch styrofoam, which is glued, I guess you would call it, to the back of the stairs. Everything else was removed. As I said, there was mineral wool up against the cement wall. There was forens. Everything was done. Now, we have conflicting advice as to removing that styrofoam as well. The infiltration was literally just where the stairs meet the cold room foundation. And we didn't get, wasn't flooded or anything. There was some water dripping down the wall, so everything was ripped out. Now, my question is, do we take out that styrofoam as well and just leave everything to the cement? What's the best?
That is a great question. What you want to do, I mean, I'm going to just give you the simplest formula out there.
Of course.
A cold room, if you're going to use it as a cold room, should be a cold room. Okay. Hence the
Thank
name
you for your call.
Yeah, yeah.
So no insulation whatsoever, because what's going to happen is you're going to create condensation, and it's going to be sandwiched between that styrofoam and that concrete, and then eventually it's going to start getting mustier and mustier out there, and you're going to start seeing formation of mold and so on and so forth. So the fact that you've demolished most of it now is great. I'm not saying that one piece of styrofoam might make a difference. I'm just telling you what the guideline is. The more important thing that you want to look into when you have a cold room is cross ventilation. I don't know if you have any of that right now.
Absolutely. You know, there's one higher up and one lower down. So there's the two, vents. They look like what the dryer exhaust.
Correct.
Louvered, so it's permanently louvered there.
Okay. And are they like across each other or in the same
wall?
No,
one's high, one's low. But yes, on opposite walls.
Okay. That is perfect. So that's the idea, is you want to put them on opposite walls in order to create a cross ventilation. If you have that and they're not blocked, and do not block them in the winter, because that's another common mistake that is done. You're better off putting an exterior door to separate your cold room from the rest of your basement.
Okay. Which we have.
Exactly. And you keep them, you leave it alone. You let the cold room be cold in the winter and hopefully not as warm in the summer.
One last suggestion. Would you know what the best would be to seal that joint between the staircase and the foundation of the cold room?
I mean, it depends what the cause of that leak is. If it is a crack, then you can inject it. You can urethane inject it.
Okay.
And that would be the best thing to do, really.
Thank you so much for the call. Thank you very much for your time, and thanks, Joanne.
No problem, Jerry. Hope that helped you out. All right, who is next? I think we've got Joe's been waiting patiently, and Joe has flood ceramic tiles on concrete. Joe, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Hi, Walter. During the rainstorm we had a few weeks ago, rainwater was coming in through the windows of the basement, mm-hmm. and it flooded about 2 inches of water on the ceramic floor in the basement, which is on concrete. And I was wondering, and during the rainstorm, we started washing the floor with bleach. And I was wondering if we need to remove the ceramic tile from the concrete floor.
Okay. One misconception that I've been hearing time and time again is people are using bleach on mold or in the anticipation of removing mold. That is not a good product.
Every week someone tells us they're using bleach.
And every week we say do not use bleach. Having said that, there are products for mold remediation. And if you don't want to use these products because they're not available, then you're better off using products like Dawn's liquid soap or something like that. You're better off than using bleach.
Just regular soap, like dish soap.
That's regular dish soap, you know. And the good idea behind it is you have to immediately dry after. So you mop and you dry immediately because you don't want the basement to become even more humid and create more spores. If you're ceramic is right on concrete, you don't need to touch it. What you need is a good disinfection job for the grout, and more in particular, specifically if the grout now has become a bit more porous because you haven't sealed it in a long time. So what you need is a good disinfection, but you can leave the ceramic alone.
Just quickly here, Walter, for both of you actually, Drew wrote in, what about vinegar for mold?
I mean, again, vinegar is generally a good disinfectant.
Yeah.
But what we're dealing with here is sewer backup in most cases, or dirty water, or if we are 18, 19, 21 day, 22 days now later after the storm, aren't we? Yeah, mm-hmm. This is day 22. You want to go, you're going to up it up a notch. Okay, I mean, vinegar is good for regular maintenance, regular cleanup and what have you. But now we're upping it up a notch because we're not talking about the same small flood here and there.
Yeah.
So I'd rather you use products like Benefect, Cognorium, Foster, Mold Control. These are good products that will attack multiple things, specifically when we are talking about sewer backup category 3. You have E. coli, you have endovirus, you have bacteria, and everything else.
Ever since you've told us about sewer backup category 3... It's been traumatizing most of us. So let go of the vinegar, go for the more serious stuff.
If you can find it, go for the more serious stuff.
I hope that helped you.
It was rainwater. It wasn't sewer water. It was through the windows.
Okay. So let me just explain. That's a very good point. Joanne, you want to take a break?
Yeah, Joe, you want to stay. Keep on the line right now. We're just going to remind everyone the phone number is 514-790-0800 for the text, and the phone number is, Joe is staying on the line. Walter Assey, president of Renovco, is here for all of your home renovation and repair needs. 514-790-0800. I'm Joanne Brackus. Happy to be taking your calls and your questions. Joe has been waiting patiently for the end of that answer there, because we're talking about some water that came in. It wasn't from the sewer, Walter. It was rainwater. So what do we do then?
So, yeah. So groundwater is category 2. So it is lightly contaminated water. Now, you leave that water where it's not disinfected or mechanically dried out for more than 48 hours, it becomes category 3 water.
Ah.
So think of it as stagnant water that you even bring it from a, you know, filtered water from a bottle, and you put it somewhere and you let it stagnate there for many days. That water is going to become dirty water, it's going to be contaminated water, and so on and so forth. Same concept applies. So the fact that originally the water came from category 1 or category 2 is great, as long as we act within that 24-hour to 48-hour window. Mm.
That's what we did. My wife and I, we worked like dogs that day and that night, wiping and cleaning. And at the end, the ceramic tile was damp because we we vacuumed it, and then my wife applied the bleach like I mentioned, but I understand that it's not the best product.
Yeah.
Is there something I could use now? And you mentioned a disinfectant I could use.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's a Benefect or Cognorium, Foster, Mold Control. All of these are good products. Okay. What I would recommend that you also do is dehumidify as much as possible. So make sure that your basement is very dry, because it did have an occurrence where your humidity level shot through the roof when this happened, and just the ambient air itself can create particulates. So you want to make sure you have your basement in check between 50, if you can bring it down 45 for a couple of days, 45%, that would be great. But beside that, the fact that you have ceramic on cement is great. You don't have to worry about removing it.
All right.
One more quick one. I had fiberglass on the walls and between the wooden studs. I removed all the fiberglass. What should I put in instead for future?
Urethane will be great, but your issue is probably the fact that you didn't remove all of the walls, did you?
I removed the outside wall. I removed the entire wall.
Okay, great.
So that's where the water came in through the window. So those fiberglass was soaked. So I removed all of it.
I would definitely use urethane because it is waterproof and it's mold resistant. So in the future, if you hopefully you won't, but if you have another flood, you don't have to touch it. And it's more efficient as well as far as energy is concerned.
Okay, Joe, thank you so much for that call. We're going to move things on right now to Bob, who has been on the line. And Bob has problems in the crawl space. Bob, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Take it away.
Hi. We were away from the 14th to the 20th of August. And on the 22nd of August, my wife discovered, we have a crawl space, mm-hmm. and it's a finished crawl space because it was a wine cellar. And I turned off the valve before leaving and turned it back on when we got back. Anyway, my wife discovered there was an extension table stored there with a towel on top outside the crawl space. And it's about 40 inches high. There was a towel on top. The top was towel was drenched. And then when we looked, it was wet from there down to that's a finished cloakroom. And it was wet from there down to the wall was wet to the floor. And the board around the bottom started to blacken. And inside the crawl space, the wall inside, closest to the house, the opposite side to what I just described, was all puffed up. It peeled. We don't know where the water came from. It's not an outside wall.
Okay. Your crawl space, does it have cement on the floors or on earth?
No, tile.
Tile.
Yeah, okay. And it's been there for 20 years, 20 years.
And is this after the August 9... storm that you saw the water?
Yeah, when we got back on from out of town on the 22nd.
Okay, so the crawl space itself have zero. You're saying that it have zero exterior walls. All of them are interior walls.
No, the wall facing furthest away when I crawl in.
Yeah.
Is, you know, towards my front entrance walkway.
Okay.
And the one where we noticed the damage,
yeah,
is the one opposite that, closest, yeah, you know, right outside right inside the cloakroom.
Got it. So, look, during that storm, we had water coming in from a combination of places in certain cases, and in other cases, it was underneath the slab. We had sewer backup. We had from the foundation itself. I mean, you name it, we had it. So to zero in to where exactly it came in your cold room, it's very on your crawl space, I should say, it's very hard to just say that over the radio. But there's a very good chance that it came from the slab itself, and this is common to other people that got flooded. Even a small crack in their slab was, you know, getting water to seep through. So is it? It's the first time, I presume, that this occurred, right?
First time, yes.
Okay. Look, like I've been telling a lot of people, before we go on the extreme of making things and digging things and what have you, we have to remember that this occurrence is supposed to be the exception, hopefully the exception, and not the rule. A lot of the infrastructure of the city was overflooded, was overloaded, and, you know, there was just not enough for that water to be absorbed. So I wouldn't necessarily right now, I mean, unless I see a visual crack or something that is jumping in my face that I should correct, but I would not go to an extreme of, I don't know, French drains or even sump pumps in the crawl space until I have monitored it a bit longer. Now, lucky for you, it's a crawl space. It's not a finished basement. So you can afford to see a couple of more infiltrations, especially that you don't have anything that is organic there that might create mold or anything like that. So what I would do is I would wait for the next few heavy rainfalls, nice storms, and I will see if it happens again. Then we'll start looking into, do we install a sump pump in that room? Is the foundation in good shape? French drains, and so on and so forth. But at this point, I would just do nothing. Just survey it, monitor it, and let's see what happens.
Well, I need to get the damage done, repaired.
So what's the damage done, though?
Well, the wall is, you know, the wall inside the clock room, the drywall is sort of peeled, is bubbled at the top there.
Yeah.
And inside the cloakroom, it's all, you know, it was damp and wet, and I put a fan in there to dry it, but the baseboard is, you know, turned black brown.
Okay, so do me a
like to have it repaired.
Do me a favor. That fan that you put, turn it off. We don't put fans on mold, and that's something that goes for every listener out there, especially day 21. Please, if you have any fans going, if you have not dried or demolished, please turn them off. It's the dehumidification is the way you want to go. The reason I'm saying this is because you see mold, you put a fan on it. What you're doing is you are hitchhiking the mold to go anywhere it wants, and you're just giving it a transportation mechanism. So you don't want to do that. You want to turn off the fan, and you're right. If you did have a material that got wet, it needs to be taken out. It needs to be disinfected. The cavity needs to be disinfected and dried up, and then you could reconstruct.
Bob, I hope that helps you out.
Does Renovco do that?
Yes, we do.
Okay, so I have to call for an appointment?
Yes, Bob, you do.
That is correct.
Thank you for your...
How long are we waiting for?
Oh, we can tell you all of these things off air.
Okay. Yeah, Bob, give a call to Renovco. Thank you so much for taking the time and letting us know what's going on with you. It is the Home Improvement Show. Walter Assey, president of Renovco, is taking all of your questions. I mean, your home improvement related questions, 514-790-0800, until we turn you into a dating coach or a love doctor. For now, we're sticking to the home issues. So text us, 514-790-0800. The phone number is the same. We are going over to Norm right now. Norm has issues with insulation in the attic. Norm, can you hear us?
Yes. Good morning, Joanne and Walter.
Hi. Take it away.
It's a townhouse built in 2014. I had a Renoclima come in to evaluate my insulation. And in the attic, I have 9 inches of blown-in insulation. But one of the problems I've noticed is there's a peak over my front door, therefore a valley that comes down towards the gutter, and there's icicles formed there in the winter. And the technician suggested that maybe the conduits from the air exchange going up to the attic are not properly sealed, therefore there's heat escaping in the attic and melting the snow on the roof. Wondering if you have a solution for that, and how much insulation should I be adding?
Why do you have the conduit of the air exchanger going through the attic in the first place?
Well, there's a openings in each bedroom.
Okay.
In the upstairs.
Fine, but I mean, usually you could have brought that through from the basement, like you would have done the same ducting that you would usually do for a furnace.
Okay, well, I have baseboard heaters, but they went up through a closet and inside a wall between a washroom and bedroom.
Okay, I mean, I'm going to give you just a couple of options here. I'm going to give you a bit of the full answer and the to the solution, if you wish, and then the other one, which is a simpler solution. But I mean, the real issue that I have with ducting in attics in general is they are in the coldest space possible in the winter, and they are in the warmest space possible in the summer. So that can only mean trouble, right?
Right, I agree.
So if there are ways to completely circumvent that and not do it, and there are usually ways. Sometimes the technicians, when they are specialized, they look for the shortest distance and the easiest way for them, unfortunately. But they don't look at the other repercussions. So the basement is always a good starting point for any mechanicals, or even to condone a closet in second floor if that needs to be done, and then going through an exterior wall for all the venting and what have you, that would have been even more preferable. But now you're there, so the best way to do it is to ensure that you have an insulated pipe and then to insulate over that pipe in order to get the most of the R factor to avoid condensation. If there's any heat escaping in your attic, that could literally wreak havoc in your attic with time. You don't want the cold air coming from the surface to meet the warm air coming from those ducts, and then condensation will get created and eventually have mold on the plywood of the attic. So insulate, in other words, you have to insulate the heck out of it, if you want me to give you a quick answer.
Does that work for you? Does that work for you?
Yes, I presently have 9 inches of blown-in insulation.
That's not enough. The actual pipe itself have to be insulated. Let's start with that.
Okay.
So if it's not insulated, it doesn't matter how much insulation you're going to put on top of that. It's not going to work as well. So the pipe, you're going to start by insulating the pipe, and then you're going to put insulation over that.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
Because don't forget, there's a couple of things I want to just mention. The actual pipe is taking, the diameter of the pipe is taking away from the insulation thickness. So that 9 inches, let's say your pipe is 6 inches in diameter. So now on top of that pipe, you only have 3 inches of insulation. So yes, you are visually seeing in your attic 9 inches everywhere.
Okay.
But where the pipe is, you're only seeing 3 inches.
Okay.
So go heavy on the insulation, Norm.
So in that particular area, you need to re-insulate more, but you need to start with an insulated diameter to begin with.
Of the pipe, yeah.
Thank you, Norm. Thanks for that call. Marty has been waiting patiently on the line with the subject of the jour, of the week, of the always. Marty has mold in the basement. Marty, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good morning, Joanne and Walter.
Hi, take it away.
Thanks for taking my call. So 3 weeks ago yesterday, our basement got flooded. We ended up with about 18 inches of water. It was rainwater coming in through the sump pump. We started doing everything we should do. We got the water drained. We shop vacced as much water out as we could. But I have a subfloor in part of the basement, and carpeting on top of that, and a lot of furniture. Anyways, to make a long story short, we tried various disaster recovery companies, and finally 2 weeks ago, my wife called Renofco on a Saturday morning, and a little later in the morning, we got a call back from Sandro, who said he would come on Sunday morning. He showed up Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, And the following Wednesday, he started the recovery process. And I'm happy to say that as of Thursday this week, my basement is clean. It's got the blowers going to dry it off. And I just wanted to thank Renovco, Sandro, and Dimitri for the work that they did. It was just a phenomenal job.
Marty, you know, we always get calls with problems, but this is a problem turned solution. Thank you. What a wonderful call. How do you feel?
Well, thank you so much, Marty. I really appreciate that. And, you know, one of the silver linings in this particular event is we love the fact that we were present and, you know, we were with everyone in the trenches, and it was fun because everybody pulled together as a team. I mean, the community came together great. Neighbors were helping each other. And we transitioned this whole operation from, you know, all the contracting jobs that we were active. We asked all the clients their assistance to be patient with us, and we transitioned everyone into emergency mode to help people. And it worked wonders. You know, great people like you, Marty, and we really thank you for being appreciative for this. Just, you know, a fun story all around.
We don't get those kinds of calls often. So, Marty, thank you for that. And shout out to Sandro, your employee.
Yeah, Sandro did a great job.
Marty, thanks for that. You put a big smile on our faces here. Have a great Saturday.
Good. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Marty.
All right, 514-790-0800. That is where we are taking your calls and, of course, your text messages. This is the Home Improvement Show. I'm Joanne Brackus. This is Walter Assey, president of Renovco. Walter Assey, president of Renovco, is here. I'm Joanne Brackus, and we are taking your calls and your text messages, 514-790-0800. This, of course, is the Home Improvement Show. Who has been very patient? I will tell you who's been patient. Mark has been patient, and he has concrete around the pool, and he has issues with that. Mark, can you hear us?
Yes, hi. How are you? How you guys doing?
We're good, Mark. Walter is all ears.
Thank you. We have Permacon concrete pavers around our pool that was installed this past spring when we had a pool put in.
Mm-hmm.
When they used a polymer sand to seal the seams between the pavers. When it was installed, they didn't blow off the excessive sand. So when they activated it with the water, it stained the pavers. So now we're trying to figure out how to clean it. The landscape company has been trying, but they're not really professionals at cleaning. They've tried hot water, high pressure hot water, and it's worked a little bit, but you can still see that the pavers look old and they're still stained. Is there a solution that you would know?
So what you need is that because the polymer sand turns into a gluish, if you want, type of a texture. So what you need is some type of a degreaser to break down that gluish residue. So a pressure washer with a degreaser type soap in it should work. You just make sure that your nozzle is not pointed, but it's more flat. So in order not to create those lines in the pavers, and that will look actually worse. So if you are doing a pressure wash, it will work on pressure washing, but you have to add the degreaser component. If that doesn't work, you can always try dry ice blasting, which will bring them brand new. So these are the two different, if you want, solutions I can give you.
Mark?
Fantastic. Yeah, that's
okay.
Perfect. Thank
so
you
dry
so
ice blasting is going to be your last resort because it's not cheap. But if they're paying for it because they messed it up, then they have no choice.
Okay.
But I would try the pressure washing with a degreaser liquid soap in as a combination.
Thank you for your call, Mark.
Last one. Sorry, I'm just going to throw different ideas at you so you can try. But this one, I want you to be careful because you're going to run a test. There's another product called Oil Lift, and that is used to lift oil stains from driveways, whether it's asphalt or pavers or so on and so forth. It's actually a very good product. You can only find it in Canadian Tire for some reason. I would try that product, okay, on a very small area first, and see if that makes the stain go away. But try it first just to see how it reacts, and let me know.
Okay. Thank you so much. Appreciate
it. My pleasure, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. Alan is on the line now, and Alan is insulating a wall or has questions about that. Alan, take it away.
Good morning to you both. I had a problem with carpenter ants below my casement window, and what I had done to find them, I removed the...
Oh, Alan, we're losing you. Can you try speaking a little louder?
How's this?
Better. There you
Better?
Are.
Better?
Yes.
Okay, well, I removed everything underneath the rough sill of a casement window where the cripple studs are, right to the exterior aluminum cladding. And I don't want to have to remove the aluminum cladding on the outside, and I'd like to, you know, re-insulate from the aluminum cladding to the inside.
Okay.
And I'd like to know what can be done, because, as I said, I removed the tar paper, the sheathing, and the insulation, and the insulation had the craft paper on it. So that's what I'm missing right now, the tar paper, the sheathing, and so forth.
Well, where you kind of losing me is, how did you remove the, when you say you remove the sheeting, you mean the tin test or the OSB or the
well, it's like
fiber, the fiber board?
It used to be like a black sheathing.
Yeah, the fiber board.
Fiber board.
Okay, but how did you remove it? Because that's usually installed on the outside. From on the outside of the 2x4s or 2x6s. So how were you able to remove it?
I cut it out with the X-Acto knife.
Ouch. Okay.
Yeah. but I had to make sure that, you know, the carpenter ants were gone. So.
Yes. I mean, okay, I get it, because the fiberboard itself is not the greatest product when it comes to carpenter ants or wetness or dampness to begin with. So I get where you're going with.
Yeah.
I mean, look, that fiberboard need to get back in there. Okay, we cannot skip that step. So if you absolutely need to do it from the inside, you have to find a way. It's not going to be a perfect install, but you have to find a way to glue it to the bottom and the top somehow, and make sure that the joints are really butted to each other. It's not going to be easy, I'm telling you from now, because, again, usually this is something that you nail from the outside. And now you're going to do it the other way around. I mean, the easiest and the best way, not the easiest, the most efficient way would be to unclick your siding from the outside and do it from the outside and then put your siding back up again. But if that's not possible for you, then you want to do it from the inside. You're going to have to glue it, because you can't nail it anymore, unfortunately. And try to make your cuts as accurate as possible. You're going to have to be very creative when it comes to this.
Creative sounds a little dangereux to me.
Yeah, because, I mean, we're doing something that is really against the current. So we have to think outside the box. Now, what you're going to do afterwards is you're going to, because now you're going to have some air gaps whether you like it or not. And that's what we don't want to have.
Correct.
So what you're going to do is, you have no choice at this point but to go with a urethane sprayed in foam that will hopefully keep things in place and will kind of fill up those air gaps that we don't want to come in and start, you know, affecting the wood.
Okay. And, well, what about the, you're talking about sheathing or the fiberboard, but what about the tar paper? That was like, you had the aluminum, the tar paper, the fiberboard, and then the insulation.
Well, I mean, the tar paper is technically not, the real product that you want to use there is called Tyvek. And a tar paper would have been an older generation style installation. So you could do with at this point. What I would do is, when I get to get replace or maintain the siding, is I would take that tar paper out and put Tyvek instead, because it's a lot more efficient and tar paper is not really your very good friend in that location. So I'm not so much worried about the tar paper, although you could start with the tar paper and then the tin test, but at this point, you know, the urethane is going to be really what's going to be holding things together, because everything else that you're doing is kind of Frankenstein at this point.
I hope that helps you out, and remember to be safe when you're getting creative.
Absolutely.
Walter Assey, president of Renovco, thank you again. Join us again next Saturday. We take your questions and we help you out in your moments of need. Coming right up will be your CTV News update.